Welcome to the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. Each episode, the CREXI team dives into a broad range of topics to investigate trends, educate listeners, and understand the latest industry news. As the nation's fastest growing online CRE platform, we're excited to provide a window into the inner workings of commercial real estate for this generation and the next. Welcome and thank you all for joining this episode of the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. In this show, we cover a broad range of topics that cater to CRE newcomers and industry leaders alike. I'm your host, Ashley Kopovich, Regional Director at CREXI. And today we are thrilled to sit down with Gene Spiegelman, partner at Ripco Real Estate. Before we dive in, a little bit about our guest. Gene Spiegelman has been a prominent leader in the retail real estate industry for the past 27 years and is regarded as a foremost industry expert. His passionate commitment to his clients and acumen in negotiating complex retail transactions have distinguished him in the field. With extensive experience in retailer and landlord representation on a global scale, Gene possesses a unique perspective with a specific emphasis on the urban, luxury, and specialty retail sectors. In June 2018, Gene joined Ripco Real Estate LLC as vice chairman and principal. Moving into an entrepreneurial role, Gene has focused on growing the New York metro region's largest independent retail services firm and providing clients with the expertise and guidance required to navigate the complexities of today's retail environment. Before joining Ripco, Gene enjoyed a distinguished 18-year career at Cushman & Wakefield. He was widely credited with launching the retail services in the United States and is highly regarded for his passionate commitment to its growth to become an industry leader. He was also recognized as a five-time Cushman & Wakefield leading retail producer and consistently ranked among the firm's top producing real estate professionals. In 2014, Gene was named head of North American Retail Services, providing leadership for the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, and coordinating Cushman & Wakefield's global cross-border retail initiatives. He drove Cushman & Wakefield's client-only mandate across the retail platform and prepared retail services for future growth following the 2015 merger with DTZ. In 2015, Gene negotiated the most significant retail deal in modern-day Boston history with his representation of Millennium Tower Boston in the lease of 142,000 square feet to Primark in the city's renowned Downtown Crossing. He is also a two-time winner of the Real Estate Board of New York's Retail Deal of the Year Award for representing Crate & Barrel in a 48,000-square-foot lease at 611 Broadway in 2001 and Gucci in its lease to Diesel at 685 Fifth Ave in 2008. He frequently contributes to important news publications and broadcast outlets, providing commentary and insight on retail industry trends and events. Gene received a master's degree in real estate investment and development from New York University and is a graduate of the University of Maryland. He is a member of the Real Estate Board of New York, the International Council of Shopping Centers, Young Men's and Women's Real Estate Association of New York. Gene, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Of course, we're so excited to sit down with you here today and to hear all of your insights. So I know we just covered your background, but I'd love to learn more briefly about your career path and some lessons that you've learned along the way. So tell us more about where you're from and how you first got your start in commercial real estate.
Well, first again, thank you for having me here today. I really enjoy doing this and sharing a bit about my career path. And from your introduction, it seems like such a long time already. I've done so many things. I've been really fortunate to have the experience I had.
To be hearing all of your insights.
Thank you. Today. You know, from the basics, my start in this industry, it was very fundamental and based in some sort of simple assumptions and pathways. When I graduated University of Maryland, very simply, I had a job offer working in the finance department at Bloomingdale's. And I deduced that what I would be doing there was processing credit cards. It sounded like a fancy job, and it paid $17,000 a year. which I guess at the time was, you know, decent money. And I said, no, I didn't want to do that. And I spent a day with a friend of mine who had graduated 1 year earlier. And he said, come spend a day with me, see what I do. And he was a real estate broker. And I don't even think I quite understood the term. And essentially, I spent a day with him in his car, driving around Long Island, New York. He was a industrial real estate broker. And we just spent the day, you know, 3-4 hours going to a couple of buildings. I went to a meeting with him. And I just felt immediately, wow, I like this outside job. I felt there was a tangible quality to it. And the pay was a draw of $200 a week to start. And I went home and I told my parents, I'm going to be a real estate broker. And my dad said to me, son, feast or famine. And, you know, I didn't quite understand it, but I felt it. And that was my start in the business. And it wasn't this, you know, sort of auspicious start. It was very simple. And, you know, I just was taught the fundamentals. And basically, I always tell the story. I was sat down at my desk. It was like July of 1986. I got out of college. And they give me a card, an index, a box of index cards, 3x5 index cards, which most people probably don't even know what that is today. And each card was the address of a building, a tenant, some information, how big the building was, and a lease expiration date. And it was for a very large industrial park in Long Island in a town called Hopog. And they basically said to me, we want you to go out, walk to every single building, introduce yourself, do your best to update the information for the tenant in the building, get whatever information, the lease expiration, see if you could speak to somebody. And I went from building to building to building for 2 months until I completed it, walking around in the hot July, August weather. But I learned so much, but it was a very simple start. And I learned the basic fundamental of canvassing like that. And that's where it started.
Yep. I can't tell you, Gene, how many people have gotten into commercial real estate or real estate in general by happenstance, just as you're saying. You know, your friend said, come along with me. And, you know, you fell in love ever since. I got my first start in sales. I went for an HR intern position because no one was hiring when I got out of college. And then started in sales and never looked back. And the same exact thing. My mom said, Ashley, you're working so hard. Do you understand you're making less than minimum wage based on what your salary is? And I was like, Mom, I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out. Don't worry. So I love hearing that. You kind of alluded a little bit to the lessons learned, right? And kind of, you know, making that first introduction and all of the canvassing that you had to do. What were some of your mentors or early lessons that you learned in your career, maybe even mentors, middle of your career, or even now that you want to share with our audience? Mentors, lessons they've taught you, or just on the job lessons that you've learned that have been pivotal in your career?
So I'm going to hit one word there, mentor. Yeah. When I graduated college, no one defined the word mentor.
Sure.
No one said the word mentor. Yep. No one offered mentorship or even maybe understood what mentorship was. I had a boss, and my boss said, this is what you do, and basically don't come back until you do it. And it wasn't until my sixth year in the business that I had anything defined as a mentor. And you really learn by doing. It's a sink or swim type of environment. It was significantly less sophisticated when I started in the business. The owner of the company basically said, you know, they're going to treat you worse than an insurance salesman and a used car salesman, but you're going to laugh all the way to the bank. I had no idea what he meant. Sure. But there was no such thing as mentorship. And I always say that to, you know, the kids coming out of school today is their expectation, and they define their experience based upon mentorship. Sure. More than money, they look for mentorship, which is, it was a great learning lesson. But it was learned by doing and learned by experience. It was learning the hard way. There was, you know, success and failure every day.
Absolutely. I think that's just an invaluable point, is just learning by doing and not being afraid to put yourself out there. And for some of our listeners who don't have that opportunity of a mentorship, it's get out there, it's do, it's read, it's learn by experience. So I'm sure with that, Gene, has come a lot of failure and a lot of mistakes. I personally make mistakes every single day. So were there any favorite mistakes that you had made early on that have become, you know, maybe an opportunity for you or something that you personally really learned by doing?
There's been many mistakes, and mistakes continually happen. Yep. But there, along the way, you make what you might consider grievous errors. And sometimes you're forewarned about grievous mm-hmm. errors, or you learn those errors by doing it. And in my career, the errors came, there were errors and mistakes. And I'll say the errors were sometimes ignoring your gut, sure. not going the extra step. And you would see that in, guess what? The other guy got that deal. The mm-hmm. other guy got that client. The mm-hmm. other person was successful. And you missed out because maybe you didn't make the extra phone call, or you said the wrong thing in your pitch, or you didn't have the proper information, or maybe you weren't prepared enough. And those are errors you make, and you learn from those errors, so the next time you're better prepared. Sure. Mistakes come in learning by doing that. You might not have the skill set, in the sense that some things in this business get sophisticated, and they're not simple. And you think you know something, or in a negotiation, and you negotiate the wrong point, and you might get called out for it by a client, like, why did you say that? Why did you offer them more money? Why didn't you hit that point? And you realize that, well, it's something that you made a mistake with and don't. And people will call you out on mm-hmm. that. And particularly, I think, in the era that I come from, yeah. people called you out.
Yeah.
You know, here, people might be more sensitive. they were not sensitive to call you out. Sure. Like, why did you do that? Mm-hmm. And I think that over the course of the career, you make different types of mistakes. But that you only again become better by doing that. There is no perfect hitting streak in this business. Of course. I don't think in any business, but certainly not here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you got to learn from every single mistake, right? It's a learning opportunity. But I think the first point that you hit on is just making sure that you are prepared, making sure that you're doing that one extra phone call, right? Because everyone in this day and age, they want to work smarter, not harder, so to speak, but everyone's working hard. So what separates you from someone else is going that extra step, making sure that you are prepared. You have all of the knowledge at your fingertips with the age of the internet and everything like that. So making sure that you're going into those calls. And I love when people call me out. That's great, you know, and just taking that opportunity to learn and grow from that. So I think, you know, both of those points are really, really valuable. So thanks for sharing.
I like to emphasize a few points there, because I think they're, I'm still very transactional, because I mm-hmm. learned after my experience in managing a large business that I never want to do that again. I like the transaction side.
Sure.
There is no substitute for reading yes. and writing fundamentals. And I spend time, I go back to my alma mater, my undergraduate, Maryland, and I will lecture with some other alumni who are in the real estate business in New York, and we will mm-hmm. go there and we'll talk to graduate, undergraduate students about careers in real estate. And we emphasize, you know, you cannot be a desktop professional. I don't care how good you think Google Earth is, or whatever video, whatever you're looking at, whatever drone feed you're getting, you have to stand in front of the real estate, because from that drone feed or whatever Google picture you're looking at, you don't know if it smells, you don't know if it's wet or dry, you don't know if you're looking at the right angle or the height or the perception. This is a tangible business, and yep. you must be present at the property. And then if you can't take the time to read and write and be professional, your chances of success will be minimized. And I think that I don't hesitate to say there's been a huge dumbing down of the fundamentals. And that's why I opened this conversation about, it's about fundamentals, because in the end of the day, we are a contract business. Mm-hmm. So everything is based in a contract document, whether it's sure. a sale contract or a lease agreement or a title document or a deed or a mortgage. You have to be able to read it and discern it.
Right. Absolutely. So a couple different points there, which I love. Making sure that your emails are correct, right? The fundamentals, the phone calls, the emails, the text messages, are they spelled correctly, right? That goes a long way. And a lot of people are, you know, flipping through on their phones, typing emails, and there's a lot of errors in them. So taking the time to do that, I think, is key. And then also another thing in this business is being at the building, right? Making sure that you're actually seeing it and you're being specific in what you're selling or leasing, right? I think that's huge. So a lot of what you just said is going to be my next question, but what fundamentals and tenets of your work ethic do you think contribute most to your success? Do you have any daily habits that you make sure that you hit, you know, whether that's commercial real estate related or outside, you know, maybe meditation or hanging out with your family, making sure to go out, you know, to lunch or dinner with, you know, your family on a weekly basis? What habits or tenets come into your day to day, your week to week, your month to month?
I've always tried to live a life balance, you know, life work quality. And at times it went out of balance. There's no doubt about it. It happens in all lives, but it's fundamentally starts with that. You know, before I had a family, before I was married, you know, I always tried to have a decent social life and I worked hard. We worked really hard. And you always have to try to maintain that. But sometimes if you have to let it go out of balance, you have to, because it's part of, you have to pay the dividend off. You have to pay the dividend for success. Yeah. But I live my life in, I call it the make your bed approach. Is that you wake up in the morning, the first thing you do is make your bed. Yes. It's a conceptual thing. It's a literal thing, but it starts your day with organization. Yes. And I'm fundamentally one of those individuals that had good sense of organization. Mm-hmm. I have a good sense of, you know, I was told later in life, equanimity and emotional intelligence. I didn't understand these words until people explained them to me. My mother, you know, would explain that to me. But I was organized and I took the time to educate myself. I was a political science major in undergrad, and I was expecting to become a lawyer because that's what I was told to do, become a lawyer. And this is also, I think, a fundamental part of sort of my professional development. 4 years out of college, I was in the business, and I had made a move from Long Island to New York City, and I got my first job in retail real estate in the city around that time, around 1993, 94. And I was going to go to law school, and I took the LSATs at the time, and I was filling out the application for Brooklyn Law School. And as I'm doing the application, I decided I didn't want to do it. And I heard about the real estate master's program at New York University. And I said to my parents, I go, if I get into this, can I do this instead? They basically said, we'll help you. And I was able to, at that time, to use my LSAT. You didn't need, you could use a GMAT or an LSAT. And I used my LSAT to apply to a program. I got in and I got my master's at NYU, and which is still a very important real estate master's program today. And there I learned all the real estate fundamentals from a book perspective. And I learned the real estate math. I learned the real estate economics. I learned the ins and outs that I didn't get in my undergraduate career. So in my undergraduate education. So I applied that and really, you know, learned how to do discounted cash flow models. So I learned more technical aspects of understanding real estate. I'm a real estate person. This is a very important piece. I love real estate. And then I'm a professional salesperson, right? Yes. So I could do the two, but I'm an executor. There's a lot of people in this business in different sectors who are not trained to be real estate people. They're trained to be salespeople. Sure. And they're like, well, it doesn't make a difference what you're selling, you know, whatever widgets. But, you know, they have a boiler room mentality to it, where, you know, it could be selling penny stocks on Wall Street. And that's not what this business is about, in my opinion. Yep. But those education fundamentals, learning the real estate math, and just understanding real estate is what I feel what helped me become successful and doing the work.
Absolutely. I think all of that is just a ton that you just mentioned, right? The fundamental is actually knowing the ins and outs of the deals. So educating yourself, whether you have the opportunity to get your master's or, you know, do some courses online, right? There's a ton of different online courses that you can continue to educate yourself with. Then be that master in sales as well, right? And then also day to day, make your bed, right? The daily habits, the morning routines, those are super crucial for every single life. Set yourself up for success. So appreciate, Gene, you sharing that. Going into more of our topic for today, focusing a little bit more on the business of commercial real estate and your experience growing teams and setting them up for success as well as yourself. Can you give us a little bit of an overview, provide some context surrounding your experience climbing the ranks as a retail specialist, establishing the retail specialist team, eventually guiding Cushman & Wakefield's merger and acquisition strategies in the mid, 2010s? How did you shift your mindset from a national to global purview?
So, if you look at the long view, it started with being the canvasser, when mm-hmm. I was given the box of index cards and said, yep. go out and update, 300 buildings. Mm-hmm. Don't come back until you finish,
yep.
which was like the end of September.
Yeah. Right? So
it started with that. And I was just always a willing individual to learn, contribute, mm-hmm. and do my job and be patient. And this is a industry of patience. Where we tell people, this is not a 1 year, 2 year, this is like 3 years just to figure it out, 5 years to call it sort of something,
yep.
10 years and it's a business.
Correct.
And then you start yep. going after 10 years. And that's literally what it, sometimes people are exceptional and they could, or sometimes people have the best contacts and they could accelerate that. But most often people burn out.
Yep.
The people who advance are, it's the minority, not the majority of people. And it's suitable for anybody to this business. Anybody could do this business if you just basically consider fundamentals.
Sure.
But as I grew and I continued on in the business, I went from the person who was servicing other people's business to the person who was going out and winning the business and pursuing the business. And then you build your business because people trust you. You demonstrate success. It's integrity, and they believe that you will represent them well, whether it's a landlord or a tenant. Buyer, seller, whatever it is. And over time, then you start to build your team and you find people who were, in your mind, you 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
And it's a trial and error process, but you will not succeed in team building if you do not commit the time to people.
Sure.
You must commit the personal time. And like I said, I didn't have a mentor until I was 6 years into the business. Mm-hmm. Someone who taught me, brought me into the retail real estate field, and who took the time to mentor me.
Right.
And it was at that point that I learned more about the sophisticated elements of the business. They took me on an airplane and took me to Chicago to a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I met with a company called Crate & Barrel.
Yeah.
They wound up becoming my client for 22 years
yep.
because someone took me to a meeting and then they retired out of the business and I kept on the relationship. And, mm-hmm. It's that type of succession and introduction that you pass on to others that people passed on to me. I didn't do it all by myself.
Right.
But if you don't know how or make the effort to continue these things and offer the mentorship to others, you can't be successful. And for me, it just was over a period of time, you age up in the business and people trust you. And then at Cushman & Wakefield, they really looked at me as someone they wanted. They dragged me into management, kicking and screaming. But it was at that point in my career also something that I wanted to do. And I'll just tell you a quick story on a way over here. One of my mentees, someone who, 23 years knowing now and who worked with me from day one, and he grew on to do his own thing. He just closed on an amazing deal in New York City and won a big award. And I texted him, I'm like, I'm so proud of you. I said, very few people get to experience all around success. I said, it's a Derek Jeter moment. And he writes me back. He says, I really have to owe it all to you because you really took me in and trusted me. And for all those years helped me get to this place. So that to me is everything. And that's someone who's not your kid, that's
yep.
like everything to me.
Yep, absolutely. And that's why we do what we do, as managers or mentors, even although, maybe Cushman was getting you kicking and screaming, right? But clearly you did such a fantastic job if you're receiving those kind of text messages and things like that. And that's really what it's about. It's kind of leaving your legacy, right, with other people. So talk us through a little bit about your broker methodology, right? So whether that's individual or training your team, obviously you were in charge of onboarding dozens of different brokers and agents across, your career. So how did you ensure that each new team member embrace the culture of the current teams that you were at? And how did you train them and integrate them into the business and kind of pass on your knowledge? Was there any processes tried and true? Give us a little bit of insight there.
I think, first of all, some of it is gut level instinct of the mm-hmm. type of personality who presents to you.
Yep.
Does that individual have the fortitude of patience and the interest to be deal with, you know, professional sales? Mm-hmm. Can you be client facing? And do you like real estate? And to me, that was like, do you like real estate?
Right.
Are you willing to get up out of your chair and it's 14 degrees outside, go down to Soho and stand there for 45 minutes and wait for somebody? Because we still do that stuff.
Yeah.
Are you willing during the months of August to walk every single street in Soho and update our street maps and do it with enthusiasm and make sure you got every building line correct? It's very basic tests to do that. But then I also look for the technical skills. It is the basics. It is reading, writing. And over time, if you take the, you know, if you train someone how to read an LOI, how to draft an LOI, how to show space, what are the fundamentals of showing retail space in my case? And it could be industrial, office, hotels, whatever sector you're in. And how do you teach someone to understand the real estate fundamentals, hoping they actually listened in the real estate license class to know what their fiduciary responsibilities are, to know a concept like riparian rights. And just like, did you listen? Do you understand the basics of real estate? Like, you know, who are you representing? And I think if you take the time to teach others to do that, each, it's a building block. You know, once you know how to show the space, then you could send them out on their own.
Right.
Once you show someone how to, negotiate and or draft a proposal and then negotiate a proposal, they develop in advance. How do you read a lease? How do you read a contract? And it's a time consuming process. But we do encourage our people and throughout my whole career, networking, right?
Yes.
It's a major thing.
Yep.
So put yourself out there. You need to go to classes.
Yep.
Learn how to do it. Attend the Real State Board of New York events. Attend the ICSC events. Invest your own money to go do things. And it being in retail real estate, we would always say, every single time you go on vacation, no matter what you're doing on the weekend with your family, with your friends, you are engaging in our industry. If you're getting coffee at Starbucks, or if you're eating in a restaurant, or if you're traveling to LA and, you know, did you go to Pacific Palisades and see the new Caruso development? Have you been up to Malibu? You go to the Grove? You've been to Century City? Every time you go, see something because you're doing your job.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's what I love about this industry is retail is everything about what we do.
For sure.
Your life.
I couldn't agree more, and I took so much just from what you said there. First is the intelligence and the acumen, right? Are you actually capable of doing this? Are you intelligent? Are you taking in what I'm saying to you and then applying it? Second would be the passion, right? The passion for the industry, making sure that you're going the extra mile, going to tour and see all of these different places. I'll never forget when I was in New York City and there was, you know, snow projecting into my face and I'm still getting out, you know, going onto the subway, going to work because we have that passion and that drive. Another one is trusting your own intuition, right? I think you mentioned that a little bit earlier. And I think that that's really important to hire the right people and kind of train them. And then lastly is just networking, right? I mean, networking is huge in this industry, building that brand and making sure that you're going that extra mile again, seeing all of the different places and then getting your name out there. So all of that is huge. And thank you for sharing that.
I would like to share one important thing is we do value, and it was always valued through my career and others, is contribution to your community.
Right.
And we always view that as a fundamental component of being a well-rounded professional.
Yes.
Is contributing it to your community and to others around you. It softens the edges, and it's a giving back, and it's always been fun to, it's not a new thing.
Right.
It seems in a way like a new thing. It's not a new thing. It was at Cushman & Wakefield. It was part of the culture of also promotion. Yeah. And contribution was all factored into it.
Right. It's giving back, whether it's on your team, to your teammates, right? You know, you can be successful, but how are you teaching it to other people? Being that mentor that someone maybe didn't have, you know, like yourself starting in the industry, plus giving back to the community in which you're in, right? That's huge. So I love that you added that point. How has your business development mindset shifted as new tools arise? So particularly with new technologies and how they've impacted investor or principal behaviors. Can you touch on that a little bit?
That's such a, you know, interesting topic, because technology is a love-hate relationship. Sure. And we have learned that certain things work mm-hmm. and certain things don't.
Right.
And it's also, it's a unique individual experience too. So what I share is not everyone's experience, but I'll share my perspective on it. Mm-hmm. So first of all, we like to work off data and information. Mm-hmm. So we look for good data and information sources, sure. whether we have our own proprietary systems mm-hmm. or whether we're subscribing to third-party providers and subscribers. Mm-hmm. We also break it down into marketing and data, right? So marketing, let's say, is the social media aspect of things. Mm-hmm. And social media, whether you're individually marketing yourself, you're marketing your company, or you're marketing a property. Mm-hmm. And what channels are you using, right? Are you using just general internet searches? Mm-hmm. Are you using LinkedIn? Are you using Facebook, Instagram, TikTok? Mm-hmm. Whatever you're doing, X, whatever you're doing.
Yep.
We have found social media to be generally unproductive. And why is it unproductive? Because maybe the commercial aspect of social media marketing gets lost in everything else, or you're not doing it correctly, or you don't put yourself out there enough to generate enough push algorithm to make yourself mm-hmm. out there. So we find it's a huge time investment, and we're not sure of the return on the social media marketing. And it's, I feel social media marketing is better done as an individual, not as a company, because the company's mm-hmm. got to promote the brand. They can't promote the individual, in a sense, consistently enough. So I think social media is, to me, a very mixed bag of opportunity. We find marketing platforms more valuable. We find Crexie to be a valuable, growing marketing platform. We find CoStar to be, in our world, a necessary evil, that there's a tremendous amount of data there. And, you know, you want to be in the business, you have to use data. Mm-hmm. We also have what we consider, for a company our size, you know, 180 people, we have very sophisticated and proprietary data systems that we've been developing mm-hmm. For quite a number of years, particularly over the last five. You know, I joined Ripco, and this is one of the things I love, by the way. I joined Ripco, we were 65 brokers, we've doubled our size, over double our size, now we're about 140 now. And that's helping grow the company in these last 5 years through the most challenging of times, hands down, we did it. So, but we also grew it through leveraging technology platforms. We instituted an in-house project management software in late 2018, early 2019. We were a little questioning why we should do it, but our marketing requirements were becoming heavy, and we mm-hmm. needed to help our marketing team sort of like process. And you know what? That project management software saved us during COVID, because we were able to process all our work online and remote.
Wow.
So technology can be very helpful in those instances.
That's awesome. So kind of moving into some of that right there, when you transitioned to Ripco, the opportunities, embracing technology, all of that was there. What else was exciting to you about the move over? How have you been able to strategically grow the team or the business at Ripco? And what sets it apart from other brokerage houses, either in New York City or nationally?
So, you know, my move was personal to me. I spent the majority of my career in corporate real estate, and I was a suit and tie person. And it was time to move on and to do other things mm-hmm. and want the new challenges. Things had changed at Cushman & Wakefield. The world was changing. We were in the middle of the retail apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And I was looking down the line, seeing that I needed a more entrepreneurial environment to really react to what was happening in the marketplace at that time.
Sure.
And that was one of the reasons. Also, my partners at Ripco offered me the opportunity to come in as a principal and grow the business. I sort of took Cushman & Wakefield as far as I could go in growth, mm-hmm. and I wanted the opportunity to do that on a personal basis and have the equity interest in doing that, and that was the platform to do it. And as I said, you know, a few minutes ago, we doubled the size of the business, and we're continuing to grow. And it was also gave me the opportunity to do other things, engage in principal activities, which in the corporate world were harder to do. But to respond to a changing environment, again, it was the retail apocalypse narrative. And then COVID came.
Yep.
And at one point we thought, like, man, what are we going to do? And it wound up that we were very well positioned because we had a business that was based in the suburbs, mm-hmm. in the boroughs of New York City, in the city itself, in Manhattan. And we had a very dominant business in the brands and the categories that actually thrived during COVID, like grocery.
Yep.
And our business survived. And, you know, we did what was necessary to control our expenses, but we maintained our business and we grew it. And that was probably the scariest time because I left this big corporate mm-hmm. comfort zone. And here I am out there like 18 months later, you know, we're in a pickle, but we did okay. But it was those combination of things that led me to sort of the boutique world. And we are a large company. We do almost 1,000 transactions a year. Mm-hmm. So we're doing more retail transactions in the New York metropolitan region than any company. And so we are formidable competitors to the corporate platforms. And we have great corporate competitors. But this is where we're very comfortable in this market. And we still do national work. Our brokers mm-hmm. do work all over the country.
Yep.
They have their networks.
Yep. Absolutely. And I think that's a great point for you. I think it was a great movement for you. You've obviously grown the team and been so successful there. You kind of mentioned, which I want to get into, moving into the nuts and bolts of today in commercial real estate. So what's your 30,000 foot overview of current market happenings? What's mostly worthy of our attention in terms of shifts? Is there anything out there that's just fluff? So obviously we want to talk about increasing interest rates, inflation, what's happening with consumer spending. Give us the whole crystal ball, 30,000 foot overview of current now.
So having been doing this, frankly, 35 years since I graduated college in commercial real estate, mm-hmm. I've been through a lot of cycles.
Yep.
I get out of college in 1987, the stock market crashes, goes mm-hmm. down by 25%. I had no idea what that meant. It took me 2 years to figure that out, yep. and it wasn't good. But that was the first cycle. And I've been through 08, 9/11, the tech boom bust, yep. Other events, and then COVID, of course, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been through a lot of cycles. Interest rates ebb and flow. We went through a 12-year period of historically low, distorted interest rate environment. Now you're living a real interest rate environment. When I got my first mortgage on my first apartment in 1999, it was 7.25%. That was okay.
Right.
So it's a period of adjustment on interest rates, and though that's normal economic cycles. I think politics and the government distort this to an unnecessary degree, but staying away from that piece, these are normal economic cycles. What interests me the most is this: two factors. One, we have proven out that brick and mortar retail will survive. The retail apocalypse narrative is dead. And this, particularly if you're in any part of the retail real estate cycle, from shopping centers to urban to freestanding net lease, retail real estate will survive. It will thrive. It's a blend of e-com and brick and mortar. You cannot eliminate brick and mortar and drive all that commerce through trucks and rail and delivery. Not happening.
Right.
We've proved it out. Customers want the touch and the feel. Got it. Okay.
It's a blend. Hands down. Myself, hands down.
It's a blend.
We've
proven done.
Yep.
Now, what does that mean? The most interesting thing that's happening is showing the long-term viability of retail real estate is that there is no pipeline for new construction, and absorption is in double-digit rates right now. So you are seeing historically low national vacancy rates of sub 5%. People thought it was going to be 3x that. Mm-hmm. We're sub 5%. We are running out of retail inventory. Now there's issues in malls and there's always going to be challenges, but I think as an industry from an inventory, we are through the worst of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't see, and no one is seeing, a pipeline that's going to outstrip demand right now, because the pipeline is curtailed for multiple reasons. Mm-hmm. One, the interest rate environment and the cost of money. Two, cost of construction.
Yep.
Three, land availability or lack of availability. Mm-hmm. And four, the complications with entitlements and planning.
Sure.
And you could put anyone in any order, mm-hmm. but building new is very hard. Who is going to build a 1 million square foot regional mall anymore? Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see spot building, infill building, you'll see retrofits.
Yep.
But the inventory is not going to change. The inventory is going to grow so much. So I think the fundamentals of retail real estate are very strong. Now, you want to walk outside here in Manhattan and let's talk about what's happening in the office space market. Mm-hmm. If you saw the news this week, you know, Mayor Adams is proposing major rezonings for sections of Midtown to mm-hmm. begin converting the oldest stock of office space into residential, yep. responding to the changing work from home environment,
sure.
which needs to stop in my opinion.
Yep.
But in the end of the day, I always think we're going to still be at a hybrid of some sort, but the inventory is changing.
Yep.
So office has more challenges and every market has different challenges.
Yep.
So in retail, we're challenged with, you know, theft and shrinkage and crime. It's a major issue for retail, the bottom line. But I see generally for commercial real estate, there's going to be trouble in debt
mm-hmm.
and debt expiry and folks who are not going to be able to roll debt. We see it in LA with Brookfield
mm-hmm.
downtown. We see it in all kinds of assets here in New York. But it's not going to be across the board. You're not going to see it in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very fragmented business. So sure. I think the forecast for real estate is good. I think we're going to ebb in interest rates in the next 12 months.
Sure.
Might stay up there for a while,
mm-hmm.
but I think we're going to ebb.
Sure. Absolutely. No, I appreciate that. You touched a lot on retail, touched on office. Anything on industrial or any differences in Class A, Class B, anything that you want to add for our audience?
Well, I think with industrial, I think that the sector is very healthy. I think the vacancy mm-hmm. rates are still, availability rates are still very low. I actually think that Amazon backing off took some air out of the industrial bubble. It was getting way overheated. You know, when you're paying $30 a foot for industrial space across the river in Queens, that sure. used to be $8 a foot.
Right.
You know, so I think those fundamentals got upside down. Mm-hmm. But I think the industrial sector generally is very healthy. And they let a little air out of that bubble. I think hospitality has seen a great rebound. Go anywhere. Go to any hotel. See how much you're paying for a room rate.
Yes.
Anywhere. Resorts. Right. I don't think the airlines could keep up with people's interest in mm-hmm. traveling and being, mm-hmm. you know, in resort environments. I think the airlines are the big holdback
mm-hmm.
for a lot of people. But I think generally real estate fundamentals are good and residential. You can't build enough residential real estate. And again, interest rates really distort the residential market as well as public policy. And like here in New York, where, you know, public policy is just keeping inventory off the market.
Sure. Absolutely. And you hit on another point is consumer spending, right? You know, retail, brick and mortar locations definitely here to stay. But same exact thing with the airlines, right? I'll walk into the airports. They're just as busy as ever. You touched on hotels. The rates are increasing like crazy right now. It's so exorbitant in terms of nightly rooms. So yes, absolutely agree with all of that. In terms of advising some of your clients through the current times right now into 2024, how would you advise them on the current obstacles, long-term upsides, what we're going to see into 2024?
You know, I think the advisory really sort of goes sector by sector, right? So mm-hmm. if I was an investment sales broker, you know, my advisory on when to pull the trigger on a sale or an acquisition is different. When we look at the retail real estate model, you know, we will still say, listen, we're still 20, 30, 40% off where rents were mm-hmm. pre-COVID. There's still good leasing opportunities, but the fundamentals are, you know, make transactions that will have strong P&L for your bottom line in a four-wall environment. But I generally see, with the exception of making large debt deals today, that there's a go forward with caution nature in all sectors. That, you know, you could go forward, make transactions, whether you're leasing, buying, or selling, mm-hmm. but you have to do it with caution. I think certain sectors in the industry, particularly new construction, is just being held up between the double whammy of higher construction costs, labor costs, and interest rates, though we see some construction costs, certainly they peaked, some coming down a bit. You know, lead time for getting escalators of elevators have all sort of contracted. So there's risk in each sector, but I think there's a general go forward attitude. I would like to touch on consumer spending.
Sure.
That is the number one bellwether of everything, consumer spending. And sitting here in New York to look out the window here in the streets and look at what consumers do, it's not always the picture of what happens everywhere in the United States. We're a very big economy. But generally speaking, I think it's remarkable that we are not in a recession. When people are calling recession, if you look at gas prices, inflation, food costs, and we're still in positive GDP, and generally speaking, people are spending still. They're still spending. Right. But you see some retail categories where spending shifts, right? Spending has shifted out of the home because people were home for 3 years, and so they're not spending on home, and they're not selling homes. So there's less spend on the home now, but people want to go away, or they want to go out, or they want to have an experience. So they're spending money differently. But consumer spending, if that contracts, that's the biggest risk factor for all these related industries.
Sure, absolutely. So touching on that, I mean, right now your outlook is, you know, pretty positive. And when we're talking to clients, right, I think it's a little bit of an advisory, but transactions are still happening. And I think that in this environment, it's important to have a good team around you, you know, like Gene or like Ripco. So any, you know, investors, operators, owners out there, definitely give them a call, you know, use who you have and be sure about that. So before we kind of wrap up and let you go here, a little bit of advice we would love to hear from you for any young brokers or investors kind of navigating this shifting market landscape. What would you say? Any parting words to our audience here?
So I'll start with the investors first, as I view it, and I didn't term this, it's the Goldilocks economy. It's not too hot, not too cold. I just say you have to look at all your options, be very prudent about your decision making, and, you know, don't fall in love with any one deal because there's other options out there today. So you got to be particular about what you do.
Sure.
And with respect to my colleagues in the industry or anyone who's building their career, put the time in.
Yeah.
Take the time to learn. Love what you do with passion. You can't fib it. You can't fake it. you really, it shows. It shows you love it. And shortcuts show too.
Yep.
Blatantly. So we see it. Clients see it. Love what you're doing. And just put the time in and it will reward you back.
I love that. I love that. The hard work definitely pays off. The passion will show through. I always say they reflect what you project. So if you're projecting that you're excited, you're energetic, you love what you do, that client is going to be with you as well, or that person is going to be there. And just work hard at the end of the day, right? The Goldilocks market, I love that economy. The crystal ball from your thoughts here, everything is, you know, going up. And I love sitting here and talking to you about all your insights today, Gene. You are so absolutely fantastic. And I appreciate you so much for taking the time and sitting down with us today. If our listeners and our audience want to get in touch with you, how can they find you? Social media, email, phone number, give us all the details. Amazing.
That's my number.
Yep.
RipcoNY.com.
Perfect.
You can find me.
Yep. I'm find him. There. LinkedIn, message him. Do all the things. Definitely connect. Gene, again, appreciate you so much for sitting down for us today.
Thanks everyone for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure not to miss the next one. Visit go.crexy.com/podcast and sign up to get the very next episode delivered straight to your inbox. You can also subscribe to the Crexy podcast on your favorite podcast app or check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/crexy for video recordings of each episode. Goodbye, stay well, and we'll see you next time.